having new testifiers?
Yeah.
Or different ones, you mean?
That's okay.
Say who are the testifiers.
See, are you ready?
Okay.
Good evening. We are back from our, what do we call it?
Recess.
It is 6:35 on March 5th, 2014. This is the Committee on Health, Human Services, and Housing. We are taking up Senate File 2047, Senator Marty, Newborn Screening Program Modification. We did have enough people here for quorum, so we actually didn't need to reestablish a quorum since we were only in recess. But
I'm a good member, Madam.
Good members are being on time. Appreciate it.
Madam Chair, I think Senator Gorey counts as two or three members, right?
No.
Anyway, Madam Chair, I will move the A4 amendment to delete everything amendment. I believe it's in the packets just to put the bill in form that we'd like to present it.
Thank you very much. Senator Marty offers the A4 delete all amendment. This will put the bill in the form that the author wishes it. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. Passes.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, this is an issue that's been before the legislature a number of times in the past, and just as a real brief background, newborn screening, I think it started in about 1965 with a test that had only one screen as a result of the blood drop. And this is a test on the first day. Normally a child is born, just a drop of blood, I think usually out of the heel. And it had one test result for PKU at the time. And over the years, it's expanded, and the benefits of it are not only for that child, but also we've learned so much over the past that by the time my kids were born in the 1980s, I think each test, the same blood spot, was useful for 20 or 30 or so different tests. Now I believe it's well over 50 tests that they get out of that single drop of blood. It saves, I think we'll hear in a minute or two, some of the number of cases has been helpful. I think there are 140 cases a year where some child has a hereditary disorder that's identified through this. Saved countless lives and been helpful along the way after a child is born. Sometimes pediatricians will call the Department of Health to get information from the child's blood spot. Anyway, this has been something that the Health Department Minnesota, I think, was the first state to do this. I think we've had the best program. It's been invaluable for parents and pediatricians and also for learning more about things that are wrong. We've had a number of people, like all things at the health department, we want to make sure people give consent to things. This one, in a lawsuit several years ago, some parents said that the health department did not have explicit authority. The department had legislative authority to run a newborn screening program, but not explicit authority to save this. And in a court ruling a couple years ago, they asked the department to come up with some other protocol, and they came up with a temporary one very quickly. And in 2011 or 12, the legislature put that into law, that basically when a child is born, that the test is given, I think, like 99% of the cases the parents allow the test to be done. And then at that time, the default became that we would save the blood spots for 2 months and then the test results for 2 years and then destroy them. And based on that, we've been destroying blood spots. I don't think there's any state in the country that destroys the data as quickly as we do. We were the first state to have it and had the best one. Now we have one where we've thrown out many, many years of data. This bill would, I think, would give us back what we had, a good program that I think, again, 99% of parents want the test, and very, very strong number want the data stored and used for the sake of their children. And I think what we're proposing here is a system that will allow that to happen. And I'll go through the bill for you section by section, then I have a couple witnesses. First of all, Section 1 is just simply the information to provide it to parents and guardians. And we added not just make available forms to healthcare providers, but also to childbirth education programs, because I think most parents, at least first time through, go through some sort of childbirth education program. We want parents to understand what their options are with this. And then that first section, simply prior to collecting a sample, they have to provide parents or legal guardians with the following information. You can see what it is here. And that's basically the first page, what's done with the data, why you might want to save it stored, that you have the chance to opt out, that you have the chance to have the test done on your own if you don't want the state to do it. And then we make it clear at the top of page 2, you can see that the parents do have the option to request the screening be performed, but the blood samples and test data not be stored. Section 2 spells out what the parental options are. The first one is to avoid the test, which, again, we strongly hope people do not do because it's been such a life-saving test. The second option would be to test but not to store it, or the third would be to test and store it. And Section 3, the program operations, which is what they do in the program, we are expanding on the top of page 3. You can see one of the purposes, because we allow the data to be used, the blood spots and the data to be used for program operations. And with all of this, there is parental opt-out. If the parents do not want that to happen, they have the option for opting out of the storage. But the things that were here, you can see at the top of page 3, we are adding a new one, and that is that they can use the blood spots and samples for the things at the bottom of page 2 to confirm the testing, for the calibration of equipment, for the validation of the testing methods and so on. We're adding another one, and that is to do studies that would help improve the program and develop new tests. And then the next line, it makes it clear that you can't do any research or public health studies other than those operational ones without written consent under subdivision 7. The next section, subdivision 7, spells out you have to provide in writing authorization if there's going to be further research done. Section 5 below that, it's the storage. It makes it clear that it would be storage unless the parent opts out. If the parent says, again, the test is done, it's almost default. I mean, it is a default. If the parents don't opt out, the test is done. If they don't opt out, the data will be stored, but they can change their mind at any time and have the data destroyed and the the blood spots and the data destroyed as promptly as possible. Section 6 is just conforming language to the previous one. Section 7 spells out the process if you want to revoke your consent, and again, it has to be destroyed. The blood spots within a week, I believe, of the request, and the test results as quick as allowed under federal law. Then Section 8 is simply to deal with parents whose children have been born in the last 2 years. They would have the chance to opt in and say, and again, if their results are still present. Again, if it's more than 2 months before this bill was passed, the blood spots are already destroyed. But if it's within 2 years before it, they could ask the health department to retain the data. But again, that's going to be limited. And my point would be kids who were born 2 years ago and so on, we've been destroying their data without their consent. We're going to have some witnesses who would speak to it. First, I'd like to have on behalf of the Minnesota Academy of Family of Minnesota Academy of Pediatricians, Dr. Ann Edwards, and to testify.
Thank you, Dr. Edwards. Please introduce yourself and present your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Ann Edwards, and I'm a general pediatrician, a role where every day I see the benefit of newborn screening. I'm here to speak, as stated, on behalf of the Minnesota chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, which represents nearly 1,000 pediatricians and pediatric providers throughout the state. Not long ago, it wasn't uncommon to see children with conditions now discovered from newborn screening. Many of my mentors share stories with me about disastrous beginnings or individuals who never really got a chance at a full life. I've had the privilege to practice at a time with newborn screening that has prevented many of these deaths. Today, nearly every newborn is screened for these and dozens of other disorders before they leave the hospital so that treatment can begin as soon as possible. As a general pediatrician, I'm the individual who gets the call that an infant has screened positive for a disease. I'm the individual that then communicates with the family, shares the news, partners with them, and finds a specialty colleague who can really initiate treatment to support an optimal future for the child. Waiting for the symptoms of a disease, for example, poor growth, delayed development, seizures, or even worse, is just too late. It's a missed opportunity for an optimal future for a child. Simply put, I rely on newborn screening to support children. I'm deeply, deeply concerned about the future of newborn screening, the future of our children in this state, and our ability to save as many children as possible from needless suffering and death. Newborn screening is a process, not a single event. It involves a few simple tests after babies are 24 hours old to detect heart defects, hearing loss, and more than 50 types of hidden, yet treatable, metabolic conditions. Early detection and treatment are absolutely crucial. The process is really straightforward. Hospitals send newborn screening data, including blood samples, to the Department of Health to complete the screening process and initial follow-up until a diagnosis is established. Until recently, MDH kept newborn screening information for at least 18 years to assure proper diagnosis, timely follow-up, and reanalysis, and to learn about whether the program was doing its job to save lives and improve outcomes, to assure the quality. However, under a new law passed in 2012, MDH must destroy this information far sooner, robbing families of a tremendous life-saving resource and stripping the system of accountability for its work. Most families probably aren't even aware of this change until perhaps it's too late. Current law mandates most blood spots to be destroyed before a child is 71 days old, before a diagnosis can even be confirmed in many cases. Additionally, the blood spots of babies who test positive for a disorder are automatically destroyed by their second birthday, along with all the test results and values, rendering them unavailable for further analysis. Minnesota, as stated, has become one of a handful of states to destroy newborn screening data soon after birth, putting both babies and families at risk. So what's the harm in destroying data too soon? Can't babies simply be retested? The short answer is no in most cases. A newborn's blood spot provides a unique overview of his or her health at birth. It contains a variety of biological markers that can be helpful in identifying and treating certain diseases for years to come. Once a newborn blood spot is destroyed, it can never be recovered or replaced. Long-term storage of newborn screening blood spots and test results are critical for accurate and timely diagnosis and treatment for certain diseases that may or may not be apparent right away. Under the current law, physicians have no direct way to access or reanalyze a child's newborn screening data after age 2. I use that data often. It has been destroyed. In fact, MDH is not even able to confirm that testing may be dangerous, which results in many retests. The ability to access newborn screening data can be critical in emergency situations and extremely helpful in cases of unexplained death. MDH serves as a point of contact since the test results are not always easily accessible in medical records. In addition, long-term storage of newborn screening data provides the basis for quality improvement and new test development, which are necessary for saving even more lives. This becomes a challenge when the data is destroyed too soon. In fact, the state most recently was forced to delay testing for severe combined immune deficiency for this very reason. The SCID disorders are deadly conditions, making it nearly impossible to fight off infections. It saddens me to know that with this delay, some babies were almost certainly missed, resulting in death. The arbitrary timeframes under the current law are based on the premise of protecting patient privacy. In my view, this fear is misguided, and it comes at a high cost to children and their families. While data privacy is something everyone should be concerned about and is something we are in the medical profession take very, very seriously, It should not be based on unfounded fears or fail to take into account the many policies already in place that prevent unlawful access to individual data. We should not allow medical care to be compromised for the sake of suspicions of invasion of privacy. In Minnesota, newborn screening has saved more than 5,000 children from a lifetime of chronic illness, physical disabilities, and death. I urge the 2014 state legislature to remove these arbitrary storage timeframes and expand the window of opportunity for health-related testing for the sake of babies born now and in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Edwards. We have the names of some Paula Bastian, who is at the table as well, and you have someone with you. So please introduce yourself and your seatmate and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senators. As my daughter Andrea put it, this is my daughter Andrea, as she put it, she's been waiting a lifetime for this moment to speak on behalf of newborn screening, as newborn screening is why she is here today. Excuse me if I get a little emotional. You know, when you live it with a genetic disease diagnosed from newborn screening, you just live it. You know, it becomes your life. It becomes who you are. It becomes, you know, it changes everything. But when you have the moment like this to sit down and you really think about how devastating it would have been for Andrea without newborn screening, it blows my mind. This is so powerful, and it is so important. And we need the state health department, the public health lab, to keep doing what they need to do to be the leader in the forefront, you know, for our United States and taking care of our children. Let's please show people, show other states how to be and the right way to go about it. I think we have proof right here. Her name is Andrea Bastian. And with that, I'm going to let Andrea read a story, her story, on living a life with PKU. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, Andrea. Andrea Bastian. Please proceed.
My name is Andrea Diane Bastian, and I believe that every child deserves a chance. Without newborn screening, that chance would be taken away from many babies. Without newborn screening, I would not be standing, well, in this case, sitting here today. I have a genetic disease called PKU. If my disease is not caught after the first few days of life, the damage is unrepairable and cannot be undone. I would not be able to talk, barely walk, or do simple daily tasks such as getting myself dressed. And I have seen the people that have not been tested or taken care of, and it's just sad. And thankfully, I was given a chance. I am now 21 years old and in college. I'm going to school to make a difference in people's lives, to become an orthotic practitioner. I will one day help those who need braces to walk or to protect infants to protect their head and backs for back braces. Without newborn screening, I would not have been given a chance to go to college and to learn how to help others. I personally know those who have PKU and not caught in time. It is sad to know that their lives and the lives of the people around them could be so much different. They will never be able to live on their own or do anything without help. It is cruel to think that some people would take newborn screening away or make it optional just because they are afraid the government may keep their blood spots used to test the babies. It is crazy that anybody would take away a baby's chances and rights out of fear of a heel poke. Babies cannot speak when they are born. The family is their voice. The family should want what is best for their child and their child to succeed in life. And that's what newborn screening will give them. The babies would not even be given the chance to have a full, happy, independent lives. Think about your sisters, your brothers, children, grandchildren, and how your life would change if this happened to them. If they didn't get the opportunity, they wouldn't be them. I believe that I was born with PKU to help make a difference. I feel I need to help and look out for those, for other children, because they are our future. And I feel I need, children, and that people don't fully understand what newborn screening is. It can save lives of children across America. Newborn screening tests for many genetic diseases that can impair a child's life. With a simple heel poke, that child's life could be saved. So please, help spread the word that newborn screening is a good thing and that babies do need to be tested and it is nothing to be feared. And thank you for listening to my story, and please think twice about newborn screening. And just make sure that everybody does get a chance. Thank you.
Thank you. I loved the visual that I got from your testimony, that if you were asked, if you were to ask the newborn and the newborn could communicate, wouldn't they say, you know, if there's something that can help me identify a potential problem, please consider it a good idea. That's a great visual. Thank you very much, Andrea.
Thank you.
We have some other testifiers. Did you want to say something, Senator Marty?
We have folks from March of Dimes here. They didn't feel a need to testify. We'll be happy to if we wanted. And I know Ms. Brace wants to testify with concerns about it. I wanted to point out, I think in your package you have another story of a child who died at over age 2, unexplained causes. The parents have another child who's now 2 years old, and they're not sure what the cause was. They contacted the health department to get her blood spot, and it had been destroyed, and so they can't go back, and so they are now unknown what caused it. I think that's the kind of reason parents would like be saved. I think that's the reason doctors would like them saved. And I guess I just think this is a very important public health issue, and I understand people don't trust that the government's going to do the wrong thing, but it's all protected data. If anybody's worried about it getting out, the law allows them to do their own tests on their own if they prefer to do it that way. But I think that this is a very reasonable option. So with that, I know Ms. Braze wanted to testify as well.
Ms. Braze?
I am sitting in
front of her. I thought
it
looked a little different.
At the same
time. Excuse me? Oh, the House is having a hearing at the same time, so I know that we've created a distress. So please come forward, though, and then introduce yourself and begin your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
One of the things in this committee room, this is for everybody who comes for, this sound is terrible, so you need to pull that right up to your mouth and speak right into the microphone. And would you say your name, and we're going to take it down, and every testifier needs to sign in, help us in that way. We are able to record who the testifiers are if you give us your name.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair. And members of the committee. My name is Christina Pearson, and I am representing Citizens Council for Health Freedom here tonight, and I'll just begin. Let's be clear. Current law does not limit a child's access to newborn screening. This bill is focused on changing what happens after a newborn is born, and it eliminates and repeals parent consent requirements now in law for state government storage and use of newborn DNA and the genetic test data resulting from newborn screening. Consent has been replaced by dissent in this bill. See all the uses of the word elect scattered throughout the bill and realize the department has first dibs on newborn citizens' DNA. The department will store and use it unless the parents realize what is being done and take action to find and file government paperwork to stop them. This is not consent. Actual consent requirements mean the department can't do anything until the parents sign a consent form. That is current law today. Furthermore, on line 4.19, consent requirements for genetic research are repealed. Newborn screening is genetic testing. Minnesota's has been called the largest population-based genetic testing program in the nation. Newborn screening studies all involve genetic research. If passed, this bill opens citizens up to having their entire genome sequenced. Their entire genetic code could be detailed and probed without consent, as an infant or later in life, or whenever the department wants to do so and on whomever they want to do so. In case you are unaware, in September, the federal government gave $25 million to four institutions in this country to develop a genomic sequencing program for newborn screening. Finally, as it relates to this bill, Section 6 of the current law, the standard retention and required destruction language, is being repealed. That's C line 5.4 for that. So it's not in this bill for you to read, because it's repealed. So instead of storing baby DNA for just 71 days and genetic test results for only 24 months, the department will store and use this genetic information gathered from 70,000 newborns every year, and they'll keep it forever. Suffice to say, we are very disappointed that this bill has been introduced. Since we discovered the state's storage of baby DNA and the genetic test results database in 2003, the department has fought all our attempts to require parent consent. In 2009, we brought nine families together to sue the department. The Minnesota department fought it all the way to the Supreme Court, claiming that the child's blood specimen was not genetic information. The Supreme Court ruled it was. In November 2011, the Minnesota Supreme Court found the Minnesota Department of Health in violation of the state's genetic privacy law. So how, after that important and historic ruling, are we here just 2 years later facing a bill that would completely undo the Supreme Court's decision? The department's 2012 amendments, which added consent requirements to the newborn screening statute, among other provisions specific to genetic information, took the program out from under the protections of the Minnesota Genetic Privacy Act. Furthermore, last year, when the department created a Minnesota biobank to protect themselves against additional lawsuits for all the other health data and biological specimens they have collected for decades without legislative authority, the bill here specifically exempted all newborn screening activities, the bill specifically exempted all newborn screening activities as well as Minnesota Biobank activities from the genetic privacy law. So now, having exempted the department and all collection, storage, use, and sharing of other genetic information from the Genetic Privacy Act and its penalties, this bill eliminates their final barrier to comprehensive genetic research on the people of Minnesota starting at birth. This bill, we believe, should not become law. Studies show that most parents don't even know newborn screening happened. They don't know it's a government program. They don't even know it's genetic testing. Studies show they are shocked to learn about the government storage and research. And one study out of the University of Michigan called Not Without My Permission found 3/4 of parents would allow research, but only if their consent was obtained. DNA is our most private information, the substance that contains the blueprint of who we are, our genetic code, our uniqueness, a potential map to our weakness and strengths. With the health department's near comprehensive access to our medical records and their police and regulatory powers, imagine how genetic information could be used to profile individuals, limit freedoms, and push a 21st century version of eugenics, which might eventually even lead to mandatory comparison of individual genetic sequences prior to marriage or childbearing decisions. This bill is a violation of privacy, individual, and parent rights. It's a violation of the Minnesota Bill of Rights, Article 1, Section 10, and the U.S. Constitution, the Fourth Amendment. I ask you to please vote no on this bill. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Pearson. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify or speak to the bill that's in front of us as amended? Ms. Pearson, don't go too far away. There may be some questions for you. Seeing no one, I think we'll turn it back to the committee for questions on the bill to Senator Marty or to anyone who has testified. Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Marty. Why are we removing the standard retention periods?
Senator Marty?
Madam Chair, first of all, we're going back to what I think what was practiced earlier, and the Supreme Court in the ruling basically said that the state health department operates on, they have to have legislative authority to do things, and they had some things that the court ruled were just general, non-specific authority, like to run a newborn screening program. We have authorized and required them to do that. And the court said they had to have explicit authority related to from the legislature to store the data and so on. And so we're going to, this is an attempt to restore what I think was the best program in the country in terms of providing information to people. It does the same consent standard that you have for performing the test. And I know you and I have discussed that a couple years ago about the fact that, yes, you are allowed to opt out of the test. You can provide somebody else doing that. And I think the examples, the one page that I showed you of the that's in the packets of this little girl who died, her younger sister, they're trying to find out what they can't do it because that data was destroyed and she didn't have any say in that. The parents had no say. That was just standard default that we put into law. And so here we're saying the default will be to keep it so it can be used for that child, so it can be used to improve the tests and so on, and if the parents provide written consent to do other research too. But I think what we want to do is have it so that it can be there for the parents and their doctors. And if people really object to that, they can say, well, we'll have the test. We're giving the option. They can have the test but have the data destroyed and have the blood spots and the data destroyed. And some will choose to do that. Some choose not to even have the test. But my argument is that for the sake of the 5,000 kids who have benefited from this, I think this is worth doing. And again, the parents can opt out at any time. They don't want this, they can opt out at any time. I hope they don't, but they're allowed to.
Senator Benson.
And Madam Chair and Senator Marty, I would hope they don't as well. My specific concern was we're eliminating a standard retention period, which allows the spot and the test results and any data related to it to be kept in perpetuity. Even as the child turns 18, the government doesn't have to send them notice that the government now has their DNA on file. So as an adult, they couldn't even give informed consent. And so I have a great deal of concern that we have now just left a whole pile of information. And I understand that an infant doesn't understand, can't consent. Parents are to do that for them. But when someone turns 18, I guess I would like your opinion. Do they have a right to know the government has their DNA?
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Senator Benson, we have on the bill on page 4, line 19, an individual who is tested as an infant, when they turn 18, they have the right at any time to have it destroyed, and it would be destroyed promptly at that time. To me, yes, if anybody has any fear of this, they can have it destroyed. The parents can have it destroyed any time they want it destroyed. The whole question we have to decide is, you know, when the default, when most of us, I think parents and this child are horrified that they can't get that now it was destroyed, and they didn't have any choice at that. We set state law to say it's going to be destroyed. And I think that it's a much better. You can't undestroy it. You can always destroy it later. And so the child who grows up and decides they don't want it stored anymore, they can have it destroyed at any time.
Senator Benson.
Madam Chair, I didn't see that provision in there. The child doesn't get notice, or the now adult doesn't get notice. They would have to remember. And so I am disappointed that we have taken the let's keep everything. I have sympathy for a family that lost their two-year-old, but I have yet to have a medical professional explain to me how the newborn screening test would be different than a test done on a child as a two-year-old to look for a genetic disorder, to look for an enzymatic deficiency, to look for heritable diseases. And I'm not a medical doctor, but I don't understand the difference between the blood in that infant and the blood in a two-year-old. And so if, Madam Chair, if I may request that Dr. Berry address what the biological differences are. I understand we test early so that we can prevent damage from known diseases, but can you explain to me what the genetic and biological differences are between blood in a newborn and blood in a two-year-old?
Senator Benson, this is Dr. Edwards, who replaced Dr. Berry. You didn't know that by the time, but that's okay. We'll get it recorded correctly that it's your answer, Dr. Edwards.
Thank you for the question. It's really a snapshot. At any moment in time, if you think about when you have blood drawn today, it's different than 10 years from now. The important snapshot is at birth. It's before any exposures. It is very different than what would be obtained at 2 years of age. And the other value of screening at newborn, it's before symptoms. So if I'm a general pediatrician and I have a very critically ill child at age two, I have very little time to react. I can have a newborn snapshot that gives me information and treatment options before any symptoms present. In addition to having a snapshot of what that child was like at the very birth. And we can really get into molecular details, but it's very, very different based on environmental.
And Senator Benson. Chair, I do understand that those heritable and genetic disorders that are identified at birth are much easier to treat if you start immediately. Absolutely. What I don't know is that when a child dies later, can you tell me what was learned looking back in those cases where you could look back that could not have been found out at a later point in time?
So we may...
Dr. Edwards?
Oh, yes.
It's okay.
Thank you. What we may learn is that as a child dies, we obviously have an ongoing snapshot of or story. As I said, this is an ongoing process. Newborn screening is not. You continue to look at an individual as they evolve over time. When a child dies, what it allows us to say, in particular this two-year-old who has a sibling, is what do we know about that child at 2 years, and was there something in that newborn spot that could have told us earlier? Is there something that is present at birth that now has been clouded by the next 2 years that we can go back and learn? Is there something for the family of now that has other children that we can provide and screen the older children for by looking at those spots? So there's tremendous value in, and again, looking at this as a continuum of an evolving picture and using all the elements. In medicine all the time, we look at the whole picture and use all the data to really come to support and come to the best diagnosis. There are just some elements that change once you're born and in the outer world. There's nothing that can go back and capture what was present at birth.
May I follow up along your line of thinking, Senator Benson? Am I understanding you to say, this may not be what you said, so I just want to make sure, that when you have the newborn's blood spot and then you're looking at an incident 2 years later, one of the values, maybe many values, one of the values is that if you have the original blood spot, and I think that this has occurred and why we now have 50 diagnoses, I guess would be the term to use, on blood spots, that you can pick up from that newborn screen blood spot that in the beginning you were not able to pick up. So by, let's see if I'm not articulating myself very well here, but that newborn spot, if you have that, and you become more sophisticated at testing that newborn spot because you come back from something that you didn't detect on that newborn spot before, but you can come back now and say, what do we need to look for when we do this newborn screening that would give us an indication of this disease? Is that one of the values of the newborn screen spot?
That is correct.
Madam Chair, Sarah Benson, if I might follow up with Dr. Edwards, so then is it standard practice when a child dies, perhaps during their pediatric years or prior to puberty, that you then go back to the blood spot and look for indication? Is that standard practice?
No, that would not be standard practice in every case. This would be in certain individual cases as we it would follow all the consents and the research protocols for this, but it's not standard. When everyone dies, we don't go back and look at their blood spots.
Right.
It would only be if we felt that there was value by what we've learned at the time of death.
And that's just my point, Madam Chair, is that
Senator Benson,
it is not the habit, it is not standard research protocol to say there was an undiagnosed or I've lost the terminology, but for a child who, say, under the age of 5 has an unexplained death, it is not the habit to go back and look at their blood spot and then develop a record to do testing going forward for other members of the family. This case is an anecdote for something that would have been nice for the family. And I'm not disputing it would have been nice for the family to go back and gain some assurances that perhaps there was nothing that they could have done. But we have to be very careful about using circumstances like this to do sweeping public policy that says we have to keep these blood spots for a very long time. And we've been over this in these committees time and time again. My concern is that this is such specific and such unique information that the people who have ultimate responsibility for it, that is the parents of a child who cannot give consent or adults who should be able to give consent, have to do more than just be told this is what's happening and it's good and you need to let us do it. And so I think you've tried to do a lot of things in this bill to engage parents. You have gone out of your way, which is important, to educate parents on the benefits of test results. But Senator Marty, we have again defaulted to this will happen, we will keep the data, and you as parents have to do extra work. I don't think we have reached the point where we're giving parents an actual clear choice. If we use this kind of disclosure on automobile purchases, where it said we're going to tell you all the great things about the automobile, but if there's something that's going to happen down the road, you have to ask us about it before we disclose it, I don't think that would fly through any Commerce Committee, and I certainly don't think it would pass this body. And therefore, I would like to, on page 2, line 1, delete the words upon request so that the forms are included, so that when the doctor and parent have that conversation, the forms are there. And I would certainly do anything to advocate that the tests be there, but I think parents, as part of informed consent, have to understand what they're actually doing.
Is that a motion?
That is, I would make that motion, ma'am, to delete the words upon request.
I'm going to have Ms. Kavanaugh repeat that.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, in effect, what you're saying is that prior to collecting, the operative language would be on page 1, line 11, prior to collecting a sample, persons with the duty to perform the testing, the doctor's office or the nurse. I mean, it'd be at the hospital usually, Prior to collecting the sample, the person performing the testing must provide the parents or legal guardians with a document that provides the following 10 items, and then upon request provide parents or legal guardians of infants with forms necessary to request that the blood not be collected for testing or to request to have newborn screening performed but not have blood samples and test results stored. In other words, you want to take out the words upon request, so when they say, you have to tell them these are the 10 things you have to do, and here's the forms to opt out of that all.
Essentially, it would be the same sort of information. I imagine there will be a document that says the Department of Health may store the blood samples. These are the benefits of infant blood storage. I imagine there would be a packet that the Department of Health would prepare for providers, for the people for performing the test. And it would be an additional document so that, well, I don't think I'm going to win the battle to turn this back into an opt-in, at least parents would have in front of them the piece of paper that says you have this right and you've been informed of it, adequately informed of it. If we never give them the document and they have to request it or go to a website and print it, I know a lot of people who would say, I want the test, but I don't want the storage, or I don't want it stored more than a certain length of time.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Senator Benson, I guess I, before saying anything more about that, I wonder if any of the hospitals who do this would be available. One of the concerns I have is if, I'll guarantee you, if I stick this in front of you, we put this in front of our witnesses and ask them to sign this and so on. This I'm supposed to sign here. We're requiring to give a packet of information on this and putting an extra page in there. It's one thing. I guess I would love to hear from some of the folks who do the testing, because you put that form in their head. I think instead of 99% opting for the test, I think you might get 98%. I don't know. I mean, it seems to me, unless you're trying to reduce the number who opt into taking the test, opt out of who accept taking the test, I think you're going to have a decline in the number of people taking the test. But I'm open to hearing. I mean, got letters from Children's Hospital and Gillette Hospital, and maybe somebody's here who could speak to that. Because I guess I'd like to hear the impact both on what that additionally means. I don't think an extra piece of paper is a big hassle.
Right. And was there anyone here from the to respond to Senator Marty's request, who can speak to the impact of this on those who are doing the screening?
And Madam Chair, if I may, so what you're saying, Senator Marty, is that when they're given all this other information, they won't read it and absorb it as well, the benefits of newborn screening, the benefits associated with storage, the health department may store the samples. If what you're saying is by putting an extra piece of paper in with a signature, they're not going to read that and understand it, then they cannot have, then you're saying they do not have informed consent, because it would be in the same kind of documentation as parents and legal guardians have a right to elect, that parents or legal guardians may authorize in writing. If one more piece of documentation in a packet with all of this new language cannot be read and understood and acted upon, then none of this can be read and understood and acted upon.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, I don't think that's what I said, and I don't know that I believe that that's the case. I think, again, I don't know how it's a one-piece sheet of paper saying here's the benefits. Obviously, explaining the benefits of newborn screening, I don't know if that's, if they give, I don't know what health department's been using now. I don't know if it's two paragraphs or anything else. And I don't know, maybe somebody from health department is here who can explain what they've been using or what hospitals are using. And I apologize for not having foreseen that it might be here.
While they're coming to the table, Senator Nina, I know you have a question, but we'll wait for Senator Benson to complete.
And Madam Chair, I will defer my questioning until we finish testimony and let others go forward.
I think that this is not testimony. You're here to respond to the question of Senator Benson.
Correct.
And Senator Marty.
Correct. My name is Chris Brisky. I'm the Assistant Director of the Public Health Laboratory. Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I was talking with some.
Would you pull your microphone closer? I guess
yes,
we can't get you.
Of course,
can't
yes.
get you on tape.
Okay. So again, my name is Chris Brisky. I'm the Assistant Director for the Public Health Lab at the Department of Health. And I apologize, but could you repeat what the question was again, please?
Madam Chair,
Senator Benson,
Mr. Busey,
Brisky.
Sorry, Chris Busey is over at IT. I apologize. I move that we deleted the words upon request so that the form for a parent to opt out would be included with all of the other information that the department would provide to the parents at the time of testing.
Madam Chair, can I follow up?
Senator Marty.
My question was, what is given to the parents right now? Are forms in there? How long is the list of things? I mean, saying you have to explain the benefits of newborn screening in there, is that 5 pages? Is that 2 paragraphs? What are you giving them now? Does it have forms with it? You prepare something the hospitals use, I presume. Could you speak to that?
Sure. Madam Chair,
Mr. Brisky.
I've brought to the table with me one of our supervisors and genetic counselor with the program who's going to speak in detail about exactly what's in this packet that we provide for hospitals, if you don't mind.
Please introduce yourself.
Yes, my name is Amy Gaviglio, so Madam Chair and members of the committee. Currently, what's in our fact sheet, which every parent should get before the blood is drawn, really follows very much what is in line with statute. So as far as the benefits of newborn screening, I would say it's maybe half a paragraph of information on much of what was discussed today, the benefits of early treatment, the fact that many of these conditions are hidden, that many of them do not have family history, so you can't expect to know that your child might have one of these conditions. In addition to that piece of information, we provide a lot of provider information so that providers are equipped to answer questions from parents. And in addition to that, as is listed in statute, it is a requirement for hospitals to document that information was given to the family and that the family was given the opportunity to ask questions prior to the newborn screen blood draw.
Would you be both sure to sign the form in front of you that you've testified so that we get the spelling of your names correct? Okay. So with that explanation of what is currently available, the second part of the question is about another form that Senator Benson is asking that would require a signature.
And Madam Chair, it doesn't actually require the signature. It's merely making the form available with the other information. Because right now if it says upon request, what if the provider says, okay, I don't have that form right now. I'll get it to you later. I mean, there's some logistical things that I'm not sure we completely understand, but... So what happens if we put another piece of paper in that packet?
Madam Chair, Senator Benson.
Mr. Brisky.
Thank you. Right now, one of the ways that we make this available is through our website and also via request to us. And then we make copies available when we do education to birthing hospitals and birthing centers all the way down to home births. We do education, as Amy was alluding to, that includes how to access this form and make it available to parents. A couple other things I would just note about this is that if hospitals had this form and added it to the packet that they give to everyone, we from a programmatic and educational perspective, we would have a concern with simply confusing parents if... I think, as Senator Marty was alluding to, if hospitals are pushing this in front, if they in this particular instance, if they sign it, they would actually be opting out, and so we certainly would have to ramp up efforts at the Department for Education if something like this was implemented to make sure that hospitals are not confused about what they're required to do, and that parents aren't confused either.
Senator Marty?
Madam Chair, I'm going to make an observation of Senator Benson that this is existing language. That's the procedure that's been used, that the form is provided to parents upon request. And you're proposing to change the existing law there, and I understand you think your reason for doing that is you have more concern about whether that the blood test results would be stored. Not that the test is taken, but I think the upon request. I'm not going to support the amendment at this time. I want to hear more from the health department and so on, because I think this is the existing law that, in terms of, it's given there. Here's what you have to know. If you want to opt out of this, you are allowed to opt out at any time. Right now, we can, I assume hospitals have the forms with them. I don't know.
Yes.
It's not a yes.
There is a motion. You've made a motion. Senator Benson has made a motion. Let's make sure we're clear on what the motion is. Ms. Cavanaugh?
Madam Chair and members, on page 2, line 1, it's to strike upon request, and you'd strike the commas.
Is everyone clear on the amendment? Senator Nina.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question, and this may be directed more towards counsel than the author, but if this amendment were to be adopted, is there anything that would require it to actually be a separate standalone form, or could it simply be additional language, assuming there's real estate space on the paper? I don't see this as a complicated signatory. It could be just two boxes, check here if you don't want testing and storage, or check here if you want testing but not storage, or maybe a third option. Is there anything that would prevent that from simply being added to the existing documentation as opposed to requiring an extra piece of paper?
Thank you, Senator Nina. Senator Marty, where would you like
to
direct that?
I don't see, there's nothing in here that would require it to be a separate piece of paper.
Senator Nina.
Madam Chair, my question is, assuming we could fit it into the same piece of paper or the same packet or the back side of a sheet, it seems to me having, in doing what I do now, engaging in a lot of written correspondence and trying to be clear and in training and documentation in my previous work in the corporate world, it seems to me that we could be very clear and not confusing to the parents if you were to add this on and simply create a section on a form with bold lettering that says, having read the benefits above, I opt to not receive those benefits for my children by signing below. That seems like it would be very clear, not confusing. It could maybe even be worded better than that, but it would provide, those that have seen me operate down here over the years and heard me talk, I've been through this whole new child process a number of times, and it is kind of hectic. And if I don't want those benefits because of whatever fears I have, founded or unfounded, it seems that we should make it, number one, clear for the parent what the benefits are and what they're doing if they opt out, or benefits of doing the test and what they're not getting if they opt out, but also make it convenient, for lack of a better term. If the goal isn't to try to schnooker some people and hope they get in here, even though they really maybe didn't want to, it seems to me like we could do that with what Senator Benson is proposing.
Thank you, Senator Nina. Senator Marty?
Madam Chair, I go back to the witness, Andrea, earlier when she pointed out that she didn't have a choice about having the test done at the time. And I think we have a state policy, and we've had one for many years, that we strongly encourage this. We want it to happen. And I think when 99%+ of parents, you're saying, well, maybe they're not sure whether they want to or not. Well, then the default should be to make it happen. And I think the idea of changing the law, which right now says the parents can request the forms, they can sign it, and they're out of the program. They can do it right then. But putting the form in front of somebody, I will guarantee you, I put this form in front of you right before your child is to get a test, and, I better sign here to do this. I think the confusion, if there's confusion, we want to default on the interest of the child, not the parent's decision on this. We want to default on that. So I'm going to oppose it. I think that's existing law. It's been there. I don't know. Maybe that was put in the law 2 years ago. I think that was been in the law probably, I'll guess, for 30, 40 years or more. And I'd urge us to keep it the way it is right now on that.
Thank you, Senator. Did you have a final comment, Senator Nino?
Well, just a follow-up. Senator Marty said that they could opt out right there, right then, upon request. I don't see anything that says immediately upon request. They could mail it. They could provide them with the information to go print it out online. I'm just asking, why not consider what Senator Benson is saying? And if the parent wants to immediately at that moment, give them the opportunity to do it. There's nothing here that requires that the nurse have that form in their back pocket. And since, assuming your number is correct, I don't know if you just threw that out there rhetorically, Senator, but if 99 out of 100 don't do this, my guess is they don't keep the form in their back pocket.
Okay, Senator Benson, you had another comment, I think.
Madam Chair, I looked up the form, and in addition to, you know, first of all, it doesn't let you, it just is a refusal for newborn screen. It doesn't let you opt to have the tests and then have the sample destroyed. So there's a little work to do on documentation, but that the department can take care of. Refusal of screening, you have to check a box. I choose to not have my child receive newborn blood spot screening, goes through a number of choices. I, the parent, guardian of the child named below, understand that choosing not to have my newborn screened for heritable and congenital disorders may result in delayed treatment if she or he has a disease that could be detected by newborn screening. Initial here. There are four paragraphs currently where parents have to initial. So if we made the form available to them, not shoving it at them, they still have to acknowledge that they're making some bad choices by not having their child tested. It is actually a second look at how important newborn screening is. My concern is, do they know what choice they're making? Absolutely want parents to make this choice. But then how long is the information kept? And do they know they have a right to not have the government keep their child's DNA? The form as it's structured could not be more clear that if you're opting out, you're making a bad choice. And I am perfectly fine with being clear that it's a bad choice.
Senator Marty.
Chair, I was told the hospitals do have these forms, and they do provide them immediately upon somebody requesting them. In matter of fact, if the child is born today and you're going to give them the test this afternoon or this evening, if they're to opt out of it, they have to do it then, so they would have to give them the form in that case. But if you explain, here's what's going on, and they say, I want to opt out, do you have the forms? Yes, here they are, and they can do it. I guess my point is, this has been in the law, and I can't say it's been here for 50 years or as long as the program's been around. I can say that it's in the law now, and the folks who passed this existing law several years ago thought it was okay then. I think it's still okay to keep it that way.
Any further discussion on Senator Benson's amendment? Seeing none, would you like it repeated? All those otherwise? All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed say nay.
No.
Nay. The amendment fails. Are there any more questions or, yes, Senator Nino?
Madam Chair, Senator Marty, then going back upon or to that line 2.1, what about adding the word immediately so that the hospital, you're telling me that that's a process right now. Let's just make sure that that has to be the process.
Madam
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Senator Nino, if we use some word like promptly, I think I'd feel more comfortable because sometimes, again, we're providing the beginning line, it says department make information forms available to childbirth education programs, and it seems to me that some I haven't been through childbirth education programs since pre-internet days, and I'm assuming that some people may do it that way, and so I'd say promptly seems fine to me. I'd be happy to have the word promptly in there.
Senator Eno, do you accept that?
Sure.
So the amendment would be located where?
Before the word upon on line, page 2, line 1.
So the amendment is on line 2.1, promptly upon request.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Nino.
Maybe council could suggest, is that the best place, or would it be better to place it before the word provide?
Madam Chair and Senator Nino, I put it before provide.
Then that's what I will move, Madam
okay.
Chair.
Is there any more discussion on Senator Nino's amendment? Senator Marty?
It's fine with me, Madam Chair. I think this is what should happen. I think it's what does happen.
Okay, thank you. All those in favor of Senator Nino's amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The amendment passes. Is there any further discussion?
Madam Chair.
Yeah, Senator Rosen.
Madam Chair. Senator Martin, what is the data that is collected? Exactly what kind of data do they collect that is so questionable as far as?
Madam Chair, I believe that's taking the scans they do of the blood sample, blood spot for the 50-some tests they do, and the results of that is put into it's digital data about what the test says.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Senator Martin, more specifically, what is the personal data that is required as far as it's just, it's a female?
Mr. Bicklio, were you going to answer that? Mr. Brisky.
Right. Madam Chair.
Did I get your name right? Wasn't even close. Huh? I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Mr. Brisky.
You were close. Hey, Madam Chair, Senator Rosen. So in general, we're talking about basic demographic data that's needed to uniquely identify a patient. And then we have the test results, as Senator Marty mentioned.
So, Madam
Senator
Chair,
Rosen?
Mr. Brisky, what exactly is the demographic data that you're requiring?
Mr.
Brisky.
Ms. Gaviglio.
The Biglio.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Senator close. Rosen. On the newborn screening card, there is information on baby's last name, first name, address, mother's last name, first name, time of birth weight, gestational age, the time that the specimen was collected, the initials of the person who collected the specimen, the name of the physician who will be following up with the child, and that's really so that we know who to call if there's a problem, as well as the hospital that submitted the information.
Senator Rosen?
I'm sorry, what was your last name again?
Gaviglio.
Gaviglio, okay. Thank you. Is there... the question that I have is for how long do you keep these samples? We have been working on this newborn screening forever. Senator Nee, now you've been here as long as I have. And this has always been the issue, is the data privacy issue. Is there a reason to keep that type of information, the demographic information, past 20 years, but still keep the samples? Do you have to have the information as far as address and?
So you're talking about linking the demographics with the blood spot or the demographics themselves?
The demographics with the, Madam Chair, the demographics with the blood spot. Is there any way to separate those, or is there a need to keep that information past a certain amount of time after this child is past 18?
Senator Rosen, I think the value of keeping it attached is for when a parent does request, or an adult at that point, if they're over the age of 18, would request information on themselves, then we would have that information to go back and actually pull their particular information. If we were to unlink the information, then obviously we would be able to provide them with their particular information. For research studies or something like that, if that was to be used, then unlinking them would be fine. But I would say primarily the goal for keeping the information is for those parental requests, people who are actually requesting their individual information.
Okay. Any further discussion?
I think Madam Chair, he had a response.
I'm sorry, Mr. Brisky.
Sorry, Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, I just wanted to add one thing to what Ms. Gaviglio said, and that is that it is one of our principles in the program to keep the minimum amount of demographic information to just positively identify a baby. And a really good example of why we would need to keep more than a few pieces of information is oftentimes at birth, like last name is different than what it is later in life, or even on our original newborn screening card, a baby is identified as baby boy or baby girl. So other identifying information, so such as address, et cetera, is for the purpose of positively identifying that person or patient.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Benson.
Wouldn't it be more likely that the baby's address would change than the baby's last name would change? So I find it a little odd that you say you're keeping the minimal amount of data, but you must keep an address and a time of birth. I'm sorry, I'm becoming actually more skeptical about your willingness. And then when you talked about research, that in cases of research, it might be okay to decouple. Well, no, it's essential to decouple at that point. You don't need time of birth in order to do looking forward research. And so I am actually getting more frustrated about your ability to handle this complex, detailed, highly personal data.
Madam Chair.
Senator Marty, on that point, and then Senator
Madam Chair, I agree when you're doing the research, but in order to get the consent to do the research, you got to contact the person whose data you want. You have to know who you're asking the data from in order, if I'm going to be the subject of a if my data is going to be subject of a study, they have to contact me to get my permission in order to do it. So you have to be able to contact me to get the data. At that point, you want to make sure when the data is used, it's not used in a way that somebody is going to, oh, that was your data. But in other words, it has to be accessible. You have to catalog it in such a way that you can get it to the person.
I'll follow up Senator Benson and then Senator Hayden.
I understand, Madam Chair, but our expert testified that you may delink it when you do research. If you're tracking down someone and asking their consent, then I understand needing contact information. When it moves into research, it must be de-identified. Once they've given consent, de-identification is just basically good research.
Did you want to respond to that?
Yes, Senator Benson. That is an accurate statement, and I misspoke in my might, but there are some types of research where information needs to be identifiable, and that is obviously consented appropriately, and the parents would know that that information is identifiable. In any other case, the research would be on unlinked or anonymized or de-identified data.
Senator Hayden?
Well, Madam Chair, I just was thinking about that scenario. This is fascinating. I think for the context of, you know, if you do baby boy, baby girl, whatever, and someone needs an address, well, people do move, but people could probably identify by saying that's me because I lived here at the time of birth. So I do think that there are some reasons and why you would want to get some of that information to ensure that it's the right person that you're looking for. So to me, it, you know, without going too far, it does make some sense to get some information. People's names change, people get adopted, but if there's some way to be able to get something that positively identifies, that helps to link that person, that would seem to make sense to me.
Is there any further discussion?
Madam Chair, I think Judiciary Committee has to see the bill.
Okay, so your motion would be that this bill be referred to the Judiciary Committee and also be considered for inclusion in an omnibus bill on Senate File 2047 as amended.
That's my motion.
That's the motion. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say nay.
Nay.
The motion passes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much.
And thank you for coming back this evening. Appreciate it very much.
Madam Chair.
The meeting, excuse me, Senator Rosen?
I think we deserve a treat.
Oh, do you have a treat?
Chocolate. Next time we have to do this.
Okay, so we need to have an evening treat. If we have evening meetings, and that's the chair's responsibility, right? Okay, thank you, Senator Rosen.
You're welcome.
The meeting is adjourned.
We'll take turns, Madam Chair. No. No. I can be bought very easily. No, but we're just like